couple days ago, I had one of those days where the majority of the children were out of the house with my husband, and I kind of had the whole day available to do what I wanted. And so I'm looking around and I'm like starting one task, but then I'm distracted by this, and I'm just going around and not really accomplishing anything. For me, food is always the priority because, I mean, we have to eat, right? And obviously homestead, animal care, anything like that. But after that, everybody's priorities are going to be different. You know, some people can't function in a cluttered, chaotic environment, so they're going to put housekeeping chores up higher on the list than someone who, you know, their garden needs to be perfect. I don't know that there's a formula for everyone that's going to work, but you just need to sit down and really think about your priorities.
My name is Lisa, mother of seven and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch, cooking, and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way.
Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today, I am having on Jessica from Three Rivers Homestead. She is a homeschooling, homesteading, homemaking mother of eight. So she has a lot of wisdom to share. We're going to be answering questions from the Instagram question box that we put up before each episode. So a lot to do with preserving food and zero waste kitchen, zero waste food, meal planning. And then also we had some questions about pregnancy, birth, baby sleep, all of that stuff that, you know, whenever you're in the thick of it, you just want somebody to come alongside you, tell you it's going to be okay. So let's dive in and chat with Jessica from Three Rivers Homestead. Well, thank you so much, Jessica, for joining me. I had a lot of excitement about this episode. People were like, I cannot wait to hear the two of you talk because I follow both of you. So they're really excited about it. And we have a whole list of questions that people submitted, which I think is really fun. It ranges from cooking and kitchen stuff, pregnancy, birth, babies, raising kids, homeschooling, gardening, homesteading, motherhood, all the kind of stuff that your channel is about. So let's start with introductions. Tell us about you, your family. And then I think you also are currently doing a challenge, and you do those throughout the year, right? Like a pantry challenge. And then, yeah. So tell us about that too.
Okay. So my name's Jessica and I have a YouTube channel, Three Rivers Homestead, as well as an Instagram page by the same name. And there we just document my family's journey in homesteading and homeschooling. We live in Northwest Ohio. I have eight children ranging in ages from almost 16 down to 5 months old. And we have a small homestead. We homeschool, as I mentioned. I'm really big on food preservation. That's one of my passions. I love growing food, preserving it, trying to have as little waste, food waste as possible. And so we do a lot of canning and preserving in order to accomplish that. And so throughout the year, I do several challenges to kind of get people involved in that. We do pantry challenges typically through the winter, but I had some people ask if I would do it in the summer. So coming up here in the month of June, we'll be doing, we call it the Three Rivers Challenge, both on Instagram and YouTube. And there's a hashtag where you can check previous year's content, people join, and lots of wonderful tips on how to eat out of your pantry and from your preserved stash. And then also in the month of August, we do a food preservation challenge called the Every Bit Counts Challenge, where people purpose to try to just preserve something, no matter how small, every single day, because it's those little things that add up to a nice big full pantry. And so that is what we try to do. So
that's,
as I mentioned, both of those have hashtags available. You can check out, there's up to 4 or 5 years of content available from lots of people on both of those platforms.
Yeah. So the pantry challenge, at least the one in January, from my understanding, it's like you get to dig in deep to a lot of the things that you maybe don't reach for very often, like things that maybe you don't want to cook as much, but they start to stock up and it's for less waste. So I think that's a really good idea. I was watching it all. I think it was January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great because, you know, you do all of this food preservation. You grow all the food. You know, you have the whole cow or whatever that you get in the freezer and you do all of the work to get that stored up. But then how do you use that? Or you have to be very intentional to use that because, you know, sometimes you get busy with life and you can get in a rut with your cooking and your meal planning and you forget to shop what's already there. And so it's setting these times aside throughout the year to be very intentional and purposeful in your meal planning use what you have first and then supplement, you know, with things that you get at the store. And it saves us a ton of money. It helps me cycle through the things that I've stocked up on. And it just benefits in terms of food waste too. You know, things are better the first year after you preserve them. They're fresher, there's more nutrients available. And so if you don't use it up, you know, over time, you could end up tossing the contents of those jars and it goes to waste, or the flavor isn't as, you know, plentiful in it. And so if you're intentional about using it up, you're just getting the best out of the food that you have, you waste less, mm-hmm. and you save a lot of money.
Yeah, that makes sense. So in your kitchen, when you're doing a lot of preserving, are you growing most of this yourself, or are you also sourcing it from farms, or if you get a good deal at the grocery store, how does that look for you?
All of the above. So we don't have a large homestead. Ours is smaller. And so we can't grow everything, especially for a family of 10. You know, as time has gone by, it's been harder and harder to keep up with teenagers and their appetites. So we definitely have to supplement for things that are grown locally by other farmers. And we love that. We like to support them just as much as we like to grow it ourselves. And so, you know, we do a lot of bulk food buying. We do a lot of bulk purchasing from local farmers when produce is in season and it's fresh and available at great prices. And we bring it home and we preserve that. We also grow what we can, or forage for what we can on our property, or what's available locally. And so we just do all of that to try to get the best deals and feed a large family as affordably as possible.
Yeah. So whenever you pick something up, what are your favorite ways to preserve it?
I think it depends on the item. So some things taste better when, you know, they're canned, and some things, you know, turn to mush when they're canned. So you would prefer to, you know, blanch and freeze those items. We have a freeze dryer, and there's some things like herbs that I would prefer to freeze dry because the flavor is better preserved using that method. So it really does depend on the item. I like to have multiple varieties of, even within one item. You know, if you have, let's say, corn, it's nice to can some so that it's shelf stable and just easy to dump out of the jar for a meal. But it's also nice to have some that's freeze dried that you can just, you know, dump into a soup and it can rehydrate. Mm-hmm. And it's also good to have some on the cob that's frozen for meals in that way. So, you know, you want to get as much of a variety in your food preservation as possible.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. With most things. Have you done the freeze-dried tomatoes yet? Because I'm really excited about that this summer.
Yes. I tried them as slices, right? My goal being to have, you know, sliced tomatoes throughout the winter, and that didn't turn out how I had hoped. So I don't know if it was user error on my end or what, but when I went to rehydrate them, they just kind of like fell apart. But in terms of powdering them, so freeze-drying the tomatoes and powdering them up to turn into paste and things like that, that works wonderfully. It's great. So I don't know about the slices.
I didn't think about that for paste. Yeah, I like that idea, because for the paste, you probably just reconstitute it with a lot less water and it's a tomato paste.
Yeah, it's great, because if you can add more water and turn it into a sauce, or if you just add a little bit, you know, it'll be thicker and be a paste.
I hadn't thought of doing it that way. So do you put the tomatoes all in the blender and then pour it into the little trays and then just put it in a mason jar or something?
You could do it either way. So you could blend the sauce and freeze dry it that way, or you could slice the tomatoes if you don't, you know, and freeze dry it and then powder it later on. I think you would get more efficient use of the space if you blended it prior to freeze drying it, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like that idea. I didn't think of it that way, but that seems like it'd be a lot less storage space. And then I could think of a lot of really easy ways to use that. I'm really trying to think about this summer, we're having our 8th baby. And so we have a lot of tomatoes, but I'm trying to think about how we're going to preserve a lot of the tomatoes without like basically any effort at all. That's what we're going for.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And that's what a freeze dryer is great for, that, because I think out of all of the preservation methods, it probably requires the least amount of work on the front end. You know, the work is in purchasing the freeze dryer that you have to do to get the equipment. But in terms of the actual effort that goes into preserving the food, there's very little that needs to be done. I love that about it.
Okay. So we had a lot of questions in the cooking and kitchen category. One is, how do you get the kids involved in the kitchen where they're actually cooking and helping? And at what age does that start that they're, you know, very helpful? I know you have older kids, so I know that they're probably quite helpful.
But that starts to get them to that point. It starts when they're little, and, you know, kids have natural curiosity. They don't distinguish between work and play. And so they see mom doing these things in the kitchen and they want to be there and doing it. It looks fun, like playtime to them too. And so as soon as they're able to stand there and help, you find ways to involve them. And they just over time, they will pick up on the things that you're doing and they'll increase in their competency and their skills. So I start them as young as 2 and 3 and they can stand next to me and they can stir things and they can help chop things, you know, with help, obviously, and they can do all sorts of things, knead the dough for you. And as they get used to being there by your side, that desire to be there and to help will continue in them. And as they get older and more competent, they take over that stuff for you. And I have one son, he's 14, soon to be 15. And he loves to bake. And that passion for it started when he was probably 5 or 6 years old, just because he stood by mom's side and helped making cookies. And then slowly I could let him do it himself. And he got so many compliments over his cookies that then the desire to get more compliments and make more things grew in him. And now he's a really competent baker. I don't even have to bake. If I don't want to, I can just send him in there and he can do it for me. So yeah, you just have to create the culture where kids are given the freedom to explore and, you know, make messes in the kitchen. And it is a lot more work for mom to have to go around and clean up for them in the beginning. But if you put in that work and give them that freedom in the beginning, it will pay for you tenfold in the future because they'll be competent and able to take over tasks for you.
Yeah, that's so nice. Taking a break from this episode to tell you about today's sponsor, Carly Jean. Carly Jean Los Angeles is an LA-based capsule clothing company started by Carly Brannon, a mom of four, who wanted to simplify the way that women get dressed. The mission is to help women feel beautiful in every season of life. This dress, like many of the others in my collection, is from Carly Jean. I love that they are quality and easy to wear pieces. I don't just wear Carly Jean pieces to church on Sunday or for a date night. I wear them all the time. I wear them with an apron over them in the kitchen. I can wear a lot of them through different seasons of life, like nursing, pregnancy, postpartum, and everything in between. Currently, I'm just choosing dresses that are a little bit higher waisted as I'm 33-ish, whenever this comes out, weeks pregnant. And then I know too that this will also work for the rest of the summer when I have my postpartum body and I'm trying to nurse. I like that they work through all these different seasons of life and they are collected and curated so I can be put together without a lot of effort because I don't have a lot of time to put effort into that these days. All of the CJLA basics are made in the US and you're saving money whenever you have a capsule wardrobe because you're intentionally choosing pieces that you know you will wear on repeat in multiple ways rather than just for one specific occasion, which is what I love so much. And I have my closet just full of these nice curated pieces. Carly Jean is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 20% off the entire site. This is a one-time use code. So if there's several things you want to try, like their denim or their dresses, highly recommend the denim. Actually, my oldest daughter finally found some jeans that fit her small body, but yet aren't for little kids. So she's wearing the 00 Carly Jean jeans and she gets compliments all the time. So go over to CarlyJeanLosAngeles.com and use the code FARMHOUSE20 for 20% off. Thanks again to Carly Jean for sponsoring this episode. Okay, a lot of questions about zero food waste. I know that's something that you're really big into. And what was the statistic? I think there's some statistic about how we throw away, I don't remember. I can't quote what percentage
30,
of food.
I can't remember if it's 30 something. 30%, let's say, somewhere
okay,
around there.
So that's really bad. That's, you know, if groceries are expensive, well, they could be a third cheaper than they are if you are actually falling in the stat of throwing away 30%. So I'm sure you offer a lot of tips like this on your YouTube channel. How do you, if you were to give somebody, say, like 3 or 4 tips on getting started with that, or like how do you rotate things or how do you meal plan so that you don't waste? What are some of your strategies you've learned over the years?
So I think that statistic, that a large majority of that isn't just food that we purchase and that goes home and gets put in the fridge and that we just throw away without ever looking at. I think a lot of that is leftovers. And I find that the biggest producer of food waste, people make too large of portions. They have all of this leftover food and they just don't know how to use it because they don't, maybe they have picky family members that don't like to eat leftovers, or they don't want to eat the same thing several days in a row. And so really being purposeful about your leftovers and recreating new meals out of them is a huge way to decrease that food waste. And so I find making things, for example, like a breakfast casserole in the morning, where you take the leftover meat and vegetables and potatoes from the night before and transform it into something new. It's a way to take that food waste that otherwise you might have a hard time figuring out what to do with, just this little bit of meat or this little bit of veggie, and turning it into, you know, something new and exciting for the family. Mm-hmm. That really helps. But meal planning is a really big part of it. I think a lot of people, if you don't have a plan, you're more likely to be wasteful. And part of that planning is looking at what you have in the fridge, on your pantry shelves, in the freezer. Sit down once a week, look at all of that and plan from what's already there before, you know, going out to the store and just buying whatever sounds good, because you may already have things that are at the point where they're going to expire or go bad sitting there, and they're just going to end up being thrown away if you're not intentional about using them.
Yeah. So
have a plan. That really helps.
And the leftover thing, I know what you mean, because sometimes your kids eat a certain amount and then the next meal they might not. And there'll be a really small portion of something left to where, you know, it's not going to feed the family next time. So what I do personally in my house is we have the little glass containers, we put them all in the fridge, and then we'll have a meal where it's like, okay, well, who wants the half a burger? Who wants like a little potato? I mean, we'll have like 15 different, not really 15, because it's all less than a week old, of course. We'll have a whole bunch of different stuff. And it's just kind of like, who wants one slice of pizza? And we'll just have this like smorgasbord of random stuff. And then sometimes I do what you're saying too. If it's a way that I can easily transform it into something else, I'm trying to think of the other day, I know we had some foods that didn't look all that appealing because of how the leftovers were. It's like, okay, I need to make this look like something again. A lot of times you can smother it with cheese. If it's like random bits of bread, like say you had some French toast and I don't know, just like little bits didn't get eaten, I'll make it into like a French toast casserole.
Yeah.
Like finding creative ways to make it look like, because it is good food. That's the thing. That's where I hate throwing away food, because I'm like, this was something so good 2 days ago, and now it just has a little bit of ketchup on it, or just doesn't look right. And so I need to make it look appealing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're good. Casseroles are great for that, like a French toast casserole or a breakfast casserole, like I said. But soups and stews are another big one. We'll do like an end of the week, we call it fridge dump soup, where you literally look through and you're like, okay, we have this little bit of peas left and here's some potatoes. And you know, and you just dump it in. And if you have the right seasonings in there, you can turn it into something delicious. It clears the whole thing out for you.
Yeah, I am so not against that. And I know there's going to be people who are like, ew, but I'm sorry. I just, if it was good 2 days ago, like a meal, everybody's like, oh, this is great. And then we got full and we didn't eat it. It's still good 2 days later. It just sometimes has to be reinvented. You have to use your imagination.
That's how our ancestors ate. You know, they didn't have refrigerators and they didn't have all of that. And they weren't going to let food go to waste, obviously. So you had to figure out how to take the leftovers from today and turn them into something delicious tomorrow. And I think there is a kind of a learning curve to that. Some people worry about, well, will the flavors not mix together if I take, you know, these veggies from this and I mix it with that? And you just experiment with it. If it's going to be waste either way, play with it a little bit and turn it into something new and see if you like it. And it saves a ton of money and a ton of waste doing that.
Yeah. I just feel much better about it. And it is nice when you live on a homestead that you can give it to animals that will transform it. But typically, if it was something I made, like today I made sourdough bagels, I made a couple different varieties. And I know that right now in the kitchen, there's probably like half of a half, like a quarter of a jalapeno bagel and a quarter of a blueberry bagel. And those kind of little like, oh, this little piece of bread, like they build up, and I'll take all the ones that would go with a salty dish and I would cut them up and make like a strata or something. And then all the ones that would go, like maybe the blueberry ones, might get thrown in with a few other random pieces of bread into like a French toast casserole. But I'm like, if it's sourdough and I took the time to make it, I don't want to just throw that to the chickens. Like ultimately, yes, it'll become an egg. But it also is still really good for my kids.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, if you have little bits of different things too, and you wanted to do something like a French toast casserole, doing it in a muffin pan where you can have smaller portions, each flavored differently, you know, you just put the different kinds of bread in there and then pour your egg mixture over top so that each one would have a different flavor profile. That would be a way to kind of use that up too.
Yeah.
But it's fun. To me, you know, homemaking is a lot about monotonous chores being done over and over again, right? But you find the joy in it by being creative, by finding ways to make it a challenge. And for me, that's kind of fun. Okay, I have these leftovers. The challenge is turning it into something, you know, unique and different and that still tastes good that my family will eat. I don't know.
It's satisfying.
That's how I like to make it fun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It is. I love the constant creative pursuit of homemaking. There's always something you get to be creative about, and leftovers and zero waste and meal planning is definitely several of those things. And I think as you've had children for 16, 17 years now, you've probably gotten better at knowing how much to make, what you can make with what you have, that the meal planning process is really easy. It might even just go like just in your head and not even, I don't know if you use like paper or what you do, but I think it requires a lot more effort at first.
Definitely. Yeah. And then learning the preferences of your family, portion sizes, knowing how much will be eaten without leaving too much left over. Yeah. But I, even after all these years of doing it, I'm still very much a paper planner person because I'm a busy mom. There's a million things swirling around my head at any given minute that need to get done. And so anything that I can take out of my head and get out on paper is one less thing I have to think about. And so, yeah, I sit down at the beginning of every week. I detail each meal that we're going to have. We have a plan, even down to, you know, okay, so this is the meal plan for Tuesday. I know that then on Monday night, I need to get this item soaking and need to get the starter fed or whatever and have a checklist there. And it isn't even so much about me. It's also so that one of my older children can look at the list and go help me if I need them to. They know what needs to be done for the meals the next day. So yeah, definitely a planner. That helps a lot.
I take great care in my home to source products that are healthy, natural, organic, that will promote overall health. Alongside cooking from scratch, there are some foundational things like clean water and clean air that are as important as any of these other things. Americans take about 20,000 breaths per day and spend an average of 90% of their time indoors. My kids, they spend a ton of time outside, but I spend a lot of time inside cooking. I try to keep the window open, but still, the indoor air that we breathe can be up to 100 times more polluted than outdoor air, according to the EPA. Indoor air pollutants can cause respiratory symptoms like sneezing, congestion, scratchy throat, and even more serious health problems like lung and heart disease. So what is the solution for this? I want to tell you about this podcast sponsor, Air Doctor, the air purifier that filters out 99.99% of dangerous contaminants so your lungs don't have to. This includes allergens, pollen, pet dander, dust mites, mold spores, and even bacteria and viruses. We have an indoor cat, we have pollen, and who knows what else around our house. So this just gives me peace of mind knowing that running Air Doctor will get rid of 99.99% of dangerous contaminants. Air Doctor comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you don't love it, just send it back for a refund minus shipping. Head to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code farmhouse and you'll receive up to $300 off air purifiers. Exclusive to podcast customers, you will also receive a free 3-year warranty on any unit, which is an additional $84 value. Lock this special offer by going to airdoctorpro.com and use promo code farmhouse. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, the other day I was thinking about, man, I need to do a podcast episode on trying to figure out, this is kind of a side tangent, but when you're in your home and there's about 10 things that you could do. Like, okay, I could address that. I could address that. I have that to do and that to do. And I was thinking, who should I have on? And I'm like, maybe I should just ask you this question. Do you have any tips for, I think it's easier over time. You do figure out how to move through your life without, like, that's a lot easier to do. But at first, it's really difficult to figure out which thing do I go to now? Like, how does that make sense? How do you prioritize what to work on next?
I totally, you know, it's so funny because a couple days ago, I had one of those days where the majority of the children were out of the house with my husband, and I kind of had the whole day available to do what I wanted. And so I'm looking around and I'm like starting one task, but then I'm distracted by this and I'm just going around and not really accomplishing anything, but it's like this freedom.
It's a thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Like figuring out where to go and what to do. And it's even harder when you're out of your usual element of all the kids.
Definitely. And so for me, food is always the priority because, I mean, we have to eat, right?
Right. You're not going to get too far ahead on that, probably.
Right. And so I tend to prioritize those tasks. And obviously, homestead, animal care, anything like that, obviously is a priority and needs to be done. But after that, then, you know, everybody's priorities are going to be different. You know, some people can't function in a cluttered, chaotic environment. So they're going to put housekeeping chores up higher on the list than someone who, you know, maybe, you know, their garden needs to be perfect or something like that. You know, they might prioritize weeding. Right. And so I don't know that there's a formula for everyone that's going to work, but you just need to sit down and really think about your priorities. What are the fires that have to be put out or the whole place is going to burn down? You know, put those at the top of the list and get those done first. And then, you know, the things that you can let slide, you know, put those down at the bottom of the list. You know, for me, I've always said, like, I'm not the world's best housekeeper. Like, that tends to get put down at the bottom of the priority list because for me, I can function in a more chaotic environment. And And so, you know,
No, you're definitely right. So maybe it just the answer to that is know for yourself what that is and maybe even write it down so that whenever you have this moment, you're like, okay, what should I do next? You know, like, I have 10 minutes and I know I have to do something, but like, which thing to choose? And then you end up wasting the entire 10 minutes trying to figure out which thing you should address and what things fit in a 10 minute time slot. I don't know. It was just a revelation to me the other day because I'm like, I think that's where things go off the rails sometimes is it's not that people like, it's not that whenever you're struggling with certain things, it's not that you necessarily don't have the time. It's just figuring out like when you have the time, what exactly to do with it. So that way you're getting a lot of things you do don't actually take that much time. Right. It's just like confidently moving through your day and doing the next thing. And it's not that in itself is not that easy sometimes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny as you're talking, I'm thinking about maybe the opposite of what I said would be more helpful because throughout the day, when you have little pockets of time, you tend to prioritize the things that are already important to you. If you're given a whole day, like I was talking about, where you have a lot more freedom, maybe the wiser thing to do would be to start at the bottom of your list at the things that you tend to
neglect
because you have this span of time to do it because you know that during the week when things are a little more hectic, you're already going to be prioritizing the things at the top of the list. So I'm going to try that out the next time I have another day. I'm going to go to the bottom of the list. Get those.
Yeah. Do the things you wouldn't normally pick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's something to think about. I don't know, because that's, I always am encouraging people. I'm like, just, you know, do the next, like, I had a podcast recently where I interviewed Ruth Ann Zimmerman and she talked about how you just do the next right thing. And it's funny because my husband and I have been talking about this. He listened to the episode and he's like really motivated by like what she said. And I'm like, but the other day I was doing things and I'm like, but what if you don't even know what that is? Because that is, I think, where we actually start in our homes is, okay, now I'm here. I'm used to people telling me, you know, at school or at my job, like what to do. And now I'm here, I have an open day and I have to figure out which things I should actually do so I can use the time wisely. And oh, that would be like a whole podcast episode on its own.
Yeah. And I think, you know, different seasons, we all are going to have 10 things at a given time that are the best thing to do. It's like you're saying, we have, you know, what's the best homeschooling thing that I need to accomplish today? You know, who needs me the most there? What's the best homestead project that really needs my attention? And you're right. So in all these different categories, how do you decide what is the best out of all of these things? And it's going to be different even in different seasons based on your energy level during pregnancy, you know, the right. next best thing, you know, some of the best things to do you can't accomplish due to energy levels or having a small infant. So that is, I think that is the challenge of motherhood in general, mm-hmm. but especially large family motherhood. Throw in homeschooling, throw in homesteading to that. It's a juggling act. Uh-huh. And my friend Kate from Venison for Dinner, she always talks about how you're juggling all the time. And the goal is to figure out which of the balls you're juggling. You know, they're all glass, or some of them are glass,
right.
and some of them are rubber.
Right.
And you have to figure out, you know, which ones you can let bounce and which ones are going to break if you let them go. And
uh-huh.
I don't think any of us will ever fully figure that out, because when we do, it's like by that point, the children will be gone.
You're in a whole different phase of life again.
Exactly.
So, yeah. I guess just acknowledging that it's a thing. And maybe if you have some time in the evening, try to map that out in your brain. So that way, whenever you're faced with it in the season you're currently in, maybe it'll make sense and you will be able to use time without having the stress of, okay, like, which thing do I do right now?
Yeah, using your time in the evening wisely. I think that's good too, because life during the day is constantly go, 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 go.
Yes.
Know, children need this. This project needs done. This meal needs done. That you need to have times throughout the day where you sit down and check on your mental status, organize your thoughts. And like I said, I do a planning session even on the weekend to prepare for the week. It's like sitting down and having that moment to be intentional, to decide, okay, this week, with this going on in this season of my life, what are the priorities? What are the best things that I need mm-hmm. to do? Get them on the planner, set some times. Then it's out of your head and it's less things to worry about. But I like what you said about, you know, sitting down at the end of the day, you need to do that, you know, kind of unwind, mentally prepare yourself for the next day that's coming. Or maybe you do it in the morning when you wake up, but the time to figure out what the next best thing to do isn't while you're in the middle of the chaos of the day. It's definitely going to be, you know, quiet moments where the kids aren't making all the noise. Yep. And yeah.
Uh-huh. That's when you have the clarity to be like, okay, I don't have to do 10 things right now. So now I can think about what happens tomorrow whenever there's 10 things calling for my attention and I have to choose one of them.
Yes. Yeah.
So are you interested in starting a blogging business to support you on your homestead or in your simple living journey? Or not even for an income, but just to share things that you've been learning with maybe family and friends. I have a 1-hour blog masterclass where I go over all the things that I wish I'd known when I started years ago that would have helped me to be successful a lot faster. The blogging world has totally changed. In fact, a lot of people actually think that blogging is dead because they've noticed that the journal style blogging has been replaced by Instagram and YouTube, where people share their real lives there. Blogging is as good of an opportunity as ever. It's actually the most passive way that I make an income in my business. I have several different ways that we make an income with our business, but blogging is the most passive and it's actually the best income stream. So if I had to give up all of my income streams except one, blogging would be the one that I would choose. I love a lot of them. I obviously love podcasting. I love YouTube. But if I could only choose one, it would be blogging. If that's interesting to you, or even just you're curious, how is blogging still a thing? And you want to learn for an hour in my masterclass, it's completely free. You can get that at bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school. That's all one word, no spaces, and all lowercase. Again, bit.ly/farmhouseblogging school to get my free 1-hour blogging masterclass. Okay, we got lots of questions on pregnancy, birth, and babies. And you and I both have, you know, been pregnant. Whatever. I think you've maybe had a miscarriage. I've had a miscarriage, but like 20 times maybe combined. Yeah. so we have a lot of experience with that. And I'm sure you get tons of questions on your channel and your Instagram about continuing to do things that you have to get done. All of this stuff that's begging for your attention while pregnant. So this is a loaded question, but how do you manage to keep family and homestead alive during the first trimester and morning sickness?
Oof, that is a tough one. You know, and every pregnancy is different. I've had some pregnancies where I can't even get out of bed for a small portion of the first trimester. And I've had some where I, you know, there's maybe just a week where I don't feel that well. So I'm just going to speak to like the average one because they've all been very different. And we talked about prioritizing, you know, what are the essential things that need to get done? And I think you have to have very realistic expectations for yourself during the first trimester. You're not going to be able to do everything that you can do when you're not pregnant. And so what are the things that have to be done, and just focus on those and feel zero guilt about letting the rest go. You know, if for a short period of that time, homeschooling needs to be set aside for your survival, that's what you have to do. If you're not someone who normally relies on convenience foods and things and you need to do that, that's okay. And you do what you have to do to get by. You know, once your kids are a little older, training them to be a help to you and allowing them the blessing of taking care of mom, that is a blessing for them to be able to learn to take care of others and to help mom out for a short period, relying on them. It's good for them. And that takes a little bit off of your plate. Maybe even rearranging your schedule to let your husband take over some of your tasks. That has had to happen for me during certain seasons of pregnancy and life. But then outsourcing what you can and not being afraid to ask for help. I've had first trimesters where I can't do it, you know, and so maybe my mom needs to come and take the kids for a day during the week so that I can just nap. And it's not something that I would do on a regular basis, but asking for help when I need to is one way that I survive
right. That
first trimester, because it can be rough. Some days it's enough just to pick your head up off the couch and you know, wave to one of the older children to pour something into bowls for breakfast or whatever. I just, and then you think of the moms that have younger ones that don't have that help. It's just a period of survival. And you know what? Most of the things in your life you can let go of for a short period of time and pick right back up, and they'll be there and it'll be okay. So
yeah,
essential things. Take care of the animals that need your help. You know, kids need to be fed. So find whatever you need to do to keep them fed. And the rest, you know, you can figure out later.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I know some women don't get over it in the first trimester. So this, if that's you, you're going to be like, oh, whenever I say this. But for the most part, it's a really short season. And then you go back to feeling, you know, like you can do all those things again. And so then it's like, for me, it's already a distant memory with this pregnancy and I'm only like 32 weeks pregnant. And so it's not something that really, like, in the middle of it, it feels like, will I ever, you know, feel like energized again? And you will. I mean, even if it takes the entire pregnancy, which is just awful. One of my sisters had it the whole time. But even then, it still eventually ends.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I think it's all about realistic expectations, whether it's, you know, morning sickness or even postpartum when you have a new baby. It's like you're a human being, you have physical limitations. Your rest really matters for the sake of the baby and for yourself when you're talking about postpartum. And you have to prioritize that. You don't have to be superwoman. And just know that if you let things go for a little bit, you can pick them up later on and it's all going to be okay. But it's easier to say that than to do it, because I've been there where it's like you want to push yourself, but you're just going to pay for it and you're going to make yourself sicker, or you're going to prolong the recovery if it's postpartum. You just have to be realistic with your limitations and not get in over your head. You know, I've had seasons where, you know, I know the first trimester that nausea and that feeling is going to extend toward, you know, the growing season on our homestead. And so I have to be realistic with myself and say, okay, this isn't going to be the year to do that mm-hmm. second batch of meat birds. You know, maybe we'll wait
right. And
not do that till later. Maybe the garden needs to be pared down just to essentials this year so that it's less work for me, because I know I'm going to really struggle. You just have to be realistic with what you're going to be able to do and plan. And have a plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we did this year in the garden. Normally I grow a bunch of different random, you know, other things. And this year I'm just doing onions, tomatoes, peppers, potatoes and herbs.
Yeah.
And like nothing else. Nothing like, usually I would do cucumbers and make pickles and like carrots and all of these things that are really tedious to weed. I wanted things that grow pretty quick to crowd out the weeds. And then if preserving it just requires throwing it into the freeze dryer, I know that it's not going to be my year to be standing in the kitchen canning all summer long. Like, it's just not going to happen.
And that's okay. I talk quite often about how years ago, my garden was double the size. And you would think, you know, we had less people in the house then. You'd think now more than ever, we would need a larger garden. But I had to be realistic with myself that the more children I was having, the less time I had to handle more children homeschooling and you know, more children just to care for. And so we had to cut the garden size in half just to be realistic with my time and the best use of my energy. And that's okay, because there will become a time when the little ones will be a little older, they can help more, and then we can expand that again. And so you'll have other years to garden. If it's a year where you have to, you know, be a little more selective in what you grow because you're pregnant, that's okay. You can, next year you'll do all the things, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So what are, this is baby sleep questions I get every time there's ever a question box, right? Oh, I mean, yeah. Whenever you're going through a season where the baby's not sleeping, I know this, that's all you can think about. That's like what is on your mind. And then what, again, like the first trimester, once it's gone, it's kind of like, oh yeah, I guess that was a problem. You know, like I've had Theodore sleeping through the night now for so many months that I don't even remember this problem, but it is a problem. So what are coping mechanisms after a night of bad sleep with your baby, and then like figuring out your expectations with all of that?
Yeah. Well, I always tell people I'm probably the last person to ask for good sleep advice, because I've
same.
Had
That's terrible- my problem. Here I have 7 kids and I still am like, they do sleep through eventually. I'm really bad with it all. I don't know.
You know, and I had my 8th, she was born in December, and I thought for sure, finally, you know, I had this great sleeper and she was so able to self-soothe and everything was going wonderfully. And then she hit like 4 months and now, and she's 5 months now, and we're back to the up every 45 hours, sometime or 45 minutes. See, yep. Sleep deprivation, sometimes.
The yeah. Brain fog. You're like, I'm in this.
Yeah. So I'm in the thick of it right now. And I just have to remind myself that it's just a season, and I've survived it before. I'll survive it this time, but
yep.
Being gentle and realistic with my energy and what I can do right now. And yeah, I have found though that especially with my current baby, you know, for years I've been co-sleeping. We definitely nurse on demand through the night, and it's for survival sake, just because like, I can't fathom getting out of the bed to go, you know, get my baby to nurse, because it would wake me up even more than I'm already being woken up.
Yeah.
But I have found with her that lately I have been having her sleep in the same room as me, but not in the bed with me. And it's helping finally, like yeah. I finally found the solution with her. And so every baby's different, figuring out what's going to work and get you the most sleep. And you just kind of have to figure it out. Once again, it's one of those challenges, right? With homemaking and motherhood, there's a challenge for you to figure out, what does this baby need to get yeah. the best sleep? But in terms of coping during the day, my lifesaver is nap time. And I say this all the time, I have to have a nap time. And even if I'm not napping, which I very rarely actually shut my eyes and nap, I have a quiet time in my house where anyone that's about 5 and younger takes a nap, and anybody that's older than that mm-hmm. quietly works. You know, the older kids are still doing homeschool work during that time. The ones that already have their homeschool work done just know to read a book or do something, you know, quiet, or they can go play outside quietly. And I just need that
yeah.
set couple of hours during the middle of the day where it's quiet and the brain fog can kind of settle for a little bit, and I can get all my ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. We talked about that earlier, yeah. like having those check-in moments of quiet for yourself where you can figure out, okay. And that's yeah. how I push through that second half of the day where I am so exhausted from not getting any sleep. It's like, I've had that mental check-in, things have calmed down for a minute, and I could prioritize the best use of my time for the second half of the day. And so that's how I cope most of the time. And then once my babies are sleeping through the night, I don't need that
right.
nap time as much, but it's very valuable to me right now.
Yeah. Well, you said 5 or 6 months is how old your daughter is.
She's 5 months.
Yeah. That's for me always the worst one, because it's kind of after they aren't co-sleeping as well anymore, like that 3 month, 4 month phase has worn off, but then it's before I want to do any kind of formal sleep training. And so it's, that is the, that's whenever I will be on here like, I don't know. I'm sorry. All I can tell you is that it will end and it'll be a distant memory in the past. It won't be such a big deal. And that's what I cling to because I'm like, it, yeah, there's just, there are those times with kids. And I know that some people are really good at not, like, they're good at avoiding that. And I've just come to terms with the fact that I'm not going to be able to figure that out.
Yeah, me too. I tried to with my seventh. A lady reached out to me actually on Instagram and she's like, you know, I've heard you talk about how you struggle with sleep. And she was a sleep educator or something.
Okay.
And she tried to work with me and she fired me after like
month. Because I would have hoped if I did something like that, that would at least work.
Because the habits are so ingrained in me. It's just who I am as a mother that I've come to accept. Yeah. It's just, I can't go against nature, I guess.
Well, yeah. And that's when you know it's you is whenever you talk to moms who say, my babies always sleep through the night at this age and, you know, everything like after this age, they sleep through. And then you're like, well, mine never do. That's when you know when you've had that many different children that it's you and it's not the baby. And yeah, I've come to accept that you're probably not going to teach me new tricks. This is just how it's going to be. And they always sleep through the night by about like I figure out how to get them sleeping through the night by about age one. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I can just make it, you know, like we can co-sleep and coast it out till then.
Literally the exact same story. Mine are sleeping through the night, usually somewhere between 12 to 14 months, let's say.
Yeah, and, right.
And yeah, we just have to get through it. It's one of those things just like pregnancy. Like, you know, the first trimester is probably going to be hard, and but it'll be worth it in the end. And so I just know that, you know, that first year of life, I'm going to be walking around in a zombie brain fog for a lot of it. But in the end, you know, it's good. I find too, the more children that I've had, the more I cherish that nighttime, because there are very few moments during the day where I get to just focus, you know, on the baby and just be alone with her. And so those middle of the night feedings sometimes are, you know, kind of special in that way. I mean, I would love to sleep, don't get me wrong, but have to, you know, turn the lemons into lemonade and you're like, well, at least I get time with her where I'm just focused on her and soaking up those moments.
It's really helped me too. I agree with that. I really do. Like, that's the only time whenever you're just with them. It's also just helpful for me to kind of throw my hands in the air and be like, you know what? I don't even have the mental space to figure out all of these sleep programs and all of the, I'm just going to, cause like that to me too, was I think with my first couple kids, what made that phase so much worse was that I was thinking like, there was definitely a way that I could do it differently and make it better. And so it was really stressful. And I was like, well, what should I read? What should I do? And then the last several kids, I just don't even pay any attention. It's kind of like, there's not the mental stress that goes along with like, I'm also doing this wrong. And, you know, if I would just fix it, I'm just like, hey, it'll be fine. And then so I'm a little tired, but I'm not also worrying about doing it wrong.
Yeah, I totally agree. It sounds like we probably parent pretty similarly or a mother pretty similarly with our babies. And, you know, everybody's different. Some people need the structure of like a really set nap routine. And it's just not in me. I definitely nurse my babies to sleep and nurse them for comfort. And sometimes they fall asleep and it just works for us. So
Yeah. I know you're not supposed to let them sleep, like fall asleep while nursing. I'm like, that's my only trick. That's how we get this child to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I think about, you know, having to figure out other ways to get them to sleep. And maybe it's just because I don't know, you know, I don't know what it is in me, but it's the quickest and easiest way. And I think a lot of times when you have, especially a lot of children, it's just, I got to use the most efficient method to make things happen. And nursing to sleep is definitely one of those things where it's efficient, gets the job done, and then I can move on to the next task.
Yep, definitely. Taking a break from this episode to tell you about a sponsor that I have been loving for, I think, over a year now, and that is Tubes & Co. Tubes & Co. offers skincare products, cosmetics that are made from high-quality ingredients like grass-fed tallow. So many quality ingredients, nothing bad, no artificial dyes, preservatives, scents. You can trust that everything you get from them has quality ingredients, but then it's also such high quality stuff. In the past, I have had this issue with makeup where I want to look like I'm wearing makeup. I want to have the coverage on my skin, but then I also don't want any of the chemicals that will absorb into the skin. And so I feel like I have to choose between quality and health. And I finally have some makeup that I absolutely love, and that is from Tubes & Co. I've referred. All of my friends and my family are constantly asking me, and we're all Tubes & Co. customers now. I have their liquid foundation. It is by far my favorite foundation I've ever tried, so I just ordered a new one. I love it. I have their mascara. Again, quality, yet actually feel like I'm wearing regular mascara. And then I just now am trying their natural eyeliner, and I've also loved their brow pencil for the longest time. It has this angle on the end, so it makes it really easy, even if you're not a makeup artist, which I am not. And then a brush on one side, so if you need to fill in your eyebrows, it makes it very straightforward. I just this time, for the first time, tried their glow serum. I find that with my skin as I get older, if it's dry, the makeup just cakes on and looks horrible. But if I'm nice and moisturized, my skin looks more youthful. That glow serum is absolutely wonderful. Tubes & Co. is offering Simple Farmhouse Life listeners 10% off your order with the code FARMHOUSE. So this is a one-time use code. There are some things that you have been really wanting to try out that are natural yet still really effective and won't make you miss your favorite brands of cosmetics or skincare. Definitely also try the tallow balm. You should definitely try Tubes & Co. So head on over to Tubes & Co. That's T-O-U-P-S and Co.com and use the code FARMHOUSE to get 10% off your order and try out some wonderful, beautiful, natural, and organic skincare. Okay, I'm trying to decide which of these questions we should address before, because like the amount of questions we have is way beyond the amount of time I'll keep you on here. So one I think that people would find interesting for us to touch on just has to do with our life as YouTubers, because that is something that you and I both do. And someone asks, do you ever struggle with being in the spotlight? Do you ever feel exposed? And I think you and I both curate our content in a similar way. So yeah, like what's your take on that?
Well, curate is a good word to, you know, describe what it is that we do, because, you know, I choose the things that I want to share with people. So obviously I don't expose myself. There are parts of my life that are still left private, even though it seems like I'm sharing everything, you know, there are things that are just for me and my family. And so that helps. But, you know, really, I enjoy sharing and, you know, being home and homeschooling and homesteading more rurally can be rather isolating. So it's a fun way that I can connect with other people and share things with other people when I don't get that opportunity a lot in my real life. And so I enjoy it. Do I struggle with it? I don't struggle with the sharing. I can sometimes struggle with the response to it, because I'm sure that, you know, you understand that there's all, you know, there's always critics out there. And when you're sharing something as personal as motherhood and the way that you're caring for your children, when you get criticism on that, it's really hard to not take that to heart or to, I guess, get defensive. And so there is struggles with that. But other than that, you know, no. I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you?
Yeah, I think I've pulled back over the years in sharing certain things, and that has helped a lot. Like you said, there's certain things that I'm not willing to accept criticism and feedback on. Not to say that there's not still things that just existing on the internet with seven kids and, you know, the things that we do homeschool. That, of course, I mean, they don't have to know hardly anything to criticize that. But there are certain things that I'm like, you know what? I just don't even want to put that out there, because I don't really want to receive any feedback on. And so I've gotten better over the years at making you feel like, you know, you're invited in and I'm showing you things. And that is all true, but without showing everything, like figuring out how to curate the story to leave, you know, some things for our family. And so, yeah.
I think the longer you've been sharing it too, you can predict the criticism. Oh, yes. Like I already know what people are going to say. And so you almost find ways to get ahead of it too. It's and so that makes it a little easier at this point. You know, I've been sharing for long enough on Instagram that a lot of what I share, I feel is repetitive, you know, that I've already shared it before. And so I learned from the first go around, maybe where I went a little too far in sharing and where I should, you know, have better boundaries. And so, yeah.
Yeah. You can always tell a new content creator whenever they say certain things and you're like, oh, no, no, that's not allowed. No. Like, I guess you didn't know that yet.
Yeah. And I'm a pretty open book, but on Instagram particularly. Like I like to share my thoughts and opinions. You know, there are certain topics that are completely off limits because I just don't have the mental energy to deal with the backlash that I'll get on some things. But, you know, I don't mind a healthy exchange of differing opinions. I've learned there are some people who have confronted me with differences of opinion and they've changed my mind on things that I've shared. And so I love that. I love having a forum to talk about that. But yeah, then there are some days where it's like, I don't want to hear everybody's opinions on that. So we'll just avoid that topic because a lot of it has to do with mental energy. Like I said, you know, I'm sleep deprived sometimes through pregnancy or postpartum. I'm hormonal and emotional on top of that. So criticisms that you receive can hit a little harder during some times than other. And so you just have to know good boundaries for the season of life you're in and what you have the mental energy to handle debating with people.
Yeah.
And then having boundaries on the debate as well, because I think there was a period of time early on where I would engage in debate with just anybody. And now nothing good comes from that. So no. You learn to just move on.
Yeah. You do learn how to handle yourself with the criticism, knowing like engaging. I was actually talking about this over the weekend. My dad, we were talking about like a few random things from recently on all of me and my sister's platforms because we all do social media to some extent. And he's like, well, I would say this. And I'm like, you can't do that. Like, Dad, that's not going to work. Like, it'll do literally nothing. It'll make them like show their claws even more. Like, that's not how this works. And you have to learn how to navigate that. And then also how to put up boundaries on what you're even willing to read. I mean, sometimes I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to put this out here and you guys have fun with it, but I can't even hang around to see what you're going to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've talked to some women. I know that they don't even touch their comments or their DMs for that reason, to protect, like they might have someone filter them for them.
Right.
And there've been times where I've been tempted to do that, but I haven't gotten there yet. I do ignore though. If I put something out there that I already know is
going to draw. Yes.
Yes. That I'll just step away and give myself some space from the emotion of the topic. And then when I come back more clear-headed, then I can read through and filter myself and not get immediately defensive.
Mm-hmm. But
that's a struggle. I don't mind the sharing. It's just, if everybody could just respond kindly, you know, like,
or even share opinions in a kind way. And sometimes I think it's just the overwhelming amount of response, because every once in a while I'll read something that I'm like, and I'm like, wait a minute, that wasn't even mean. I think I just get too many responses that I'm now interpreting like just ordinary conversation as something that's meant to be taken, you know, as a insult now, because it is sometimes just too much. And a lot, and there are times when I just step away completely and I do what you said. I have somebody filter them. I'm like, I can't mentally take anything. So you just go ahead and you go through them, see if there's anything that I wouldn't want to see, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. My husband says that he always reminds me to check where I'm at mentally before I read, you know, text from someone, because you can put emotion there that wasn't intended.
Yes.
But yeah.
Yeah. No, it's overall something that I love doing. And for the most part, I've built, and you have too, an amazing community of people who find encouragement from the content, who would be, you know, they just really like, they're maybe young moms or someone who is a new homemaker who find a lot of value in it. And overall, that definitely outweighs the people who just go around the internet, I mean, being negative. Like, if you want to find, you can literally go to every post on Instagram, as long as it has a certain amount of viewers, go to the comments, no matter what. It could be the most innocent thing you could ever imagine. You could think to yourself, there is no way there's going to be something negative. And then you read through the comments, there is always something negative. So it's not you. It's not that you are, you know, a person who just deserves like all this negativity. It's just the internet. So I guess the only way to avoid it is to put nothing on the internet, but it's also optional to look at it. And I know some creators who just don't read their comments at all, and they get a lot of criticism in the comments for that. And it's like, you don't understand. Like, I think it's just fine if you want to completely ignore the comments. You've been hurt too many times, you know?
The lesson in that, though, is at least for me, doing this now several years, is I've learned a lot about myself that maybe in the past I was more likely to give my opinion unsolicited under somebody else's, you know, content or whatever. And being put in that position of constantly receiving everybody's input has made me filter for myself better. Is this necessary for me to even say? Because I already know that this person is receiving, you know, enough comments on what they put out there. Do they really need to hear my voice? And 9 times out of 10, you know, I'll say, no, they don't need to hear, you know, what I have to say about that. But yeah, so you know, use it to grow. And like I said, sometimes even from the negativity, I've taken a step back, take the emotion away from it and realize that maybe there's a little bit of truth in what they were saying and that's why it hurts. And so reevaluate and you move on from that. And if people could just say it nicely though. And like you said, 99% of people are just beautiful and kind and lovely. And I love interacting with people and it's been a huge blessing for me and my family.
Oh yes. Absolutely.
But yes, anything good, like you said, no matter what you put out there, someone is going to be a critic. You can't be everybody's cup of tea and that's okay. And recognizing that will help make it a little easier.
Yeah. Yep. I think all good advice. And I've totally had the same revelation as you where I'll think, oh, that's, you know, this or that. Like I'll have some kind of opinion and I'm like, I am not saying it. I am not saying it. That is something I have definitely learned. My opinion does not need to always come.
Yeah. Cause it's not about, it's about you feeling like you need to say that. They don't want or need to hear it. And so some things, you know, you just leave it to yourself. You move on, you hit scroll and move on to the next thing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. All such good advice. All right. Tell the listeners who don't follow you. I have a feeling a lot of people that are Simple Farmhouse Life podcast listeners do already follow you, but for those who don't, where's the best place to follow along?
Well, you can find me on YouTube. I put out videos every Sunday. And then starting in the month of June, I'll also be putting out a video on a more specialized topic every Wednesday. So you can find me there. Also, you can find me on Instagram. Instagram is where I share more daily life, a little more of my opinions, like we talked about, a little more
in-depth
and personal things, whereas YouTube is more about tutorials and things that we're doing around the homestead. So yeah, you can find me there. I post pretty regularly in stories on Instagram as well. So
Three Rivers Homestead over on Instagram and YouTube. So that's a good follow to be encouraged in homemaking, motherhood, homesteading, homeschooling, all of the home things.
A lot of time at home.
Yes, all at home. Yep, same here. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jessica, for joining us.
Thank you, Lisa. It was a pleasure.
All right, well, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to go find Jessica over on her YouTube channel. She has so many great videos in the archives and then lots more to come for you to follow along with. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I will see you in the next episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.